More, he had used the blade drop to slice up the trees into sections a few feet long and slit them. The animal was sitting on the seat now, hunkered down out of the keening wind that had sprung up. Turl untied the rope and Johnny stood up.
"What's that all about?"
said Turl, pointing at the chopped-up trees.
"Firewood," said Johnny.
"Now that I'm untied, I will carry some into the cage."
"Firewood?"
"Let's say I'm tired of a diet of raw rat, my friend." That night, having eaten his first cooked food in months, and thawing the winter chill from his bones before the pleasant fire on the cage floor, Johnny heaved a sigh of relief. The new clothes were hung up on sticks to dry. He sat cross-legged, digging into his pouch. He drew out the gold metal disc, and then he reached for the gold belt buckle he had just acquired. He studied them. The bird with the arrows was essentially the same on each one, and now he could read the squiggles. The disc said, "The United States of America." The belt buckle said, "The United States Air Force." So, his people long ago had been a nation, and it had had a force of some sort devoted to the air. The Cyclos wore belt buckles that said they were members of the Intergalactic Mining Company. With a smile that would have frightened Turl had he seen it, Johnny supposed that he was, as of this minute, a member, the only member, of the United States Air Force. He put the buckle carefully under a piece of robe he used for a pillow and lay for a long time looking at the dancing flames. 4. The mighty planet Cyclo, king of the galaxies, basked beneath the forceful rays of triple suns. The courier stood to the side of Intergalactic's transshipment receipt area, waiting. Above him, the mauve skies domed the purple hillsides of the horizon. All about him spread the smoke-spewing factories, the power lines, the tense and crackling might of the company. Machines and vehicles boiled in purposeful turmoil throughout the multi-layered roads and plains of the vast compound. In the distance lay the pyramidal shapes of the Imperial City. Spotted among the outlying hills were the compounds of many other companies, factories that spewed out their products to whole galaxies. Who would be elsewhere? Thought the courier. He sat astride his small ground-go, momentarily idle in his daily rounds, waiting. Who would want to live and toil on some forgotten light-gravity planet, wearing a mask, working under domes, driving pressurized vehicles, digging an alien soil, or, drafted, fighting some war on territory nobody cared about anyway? Not this Cyclo, that was for sure. A shrieking whistle pierced the day, the warning signal to get clear of the transshipment receipt platform, chasing away a fleet of blade, brush, and vacuum vehicles that had been clearing it. The courier automatically checked his own proximity. Good. He was outside the danger area. The network of lines and cables about the platform hummed. Then they shrieked into a crescendo that ended with a roaring explosion. Tons of ore materialized on the platform's surface, teleported in an instant across the galaxies. The courier gazed through the momentarily ionized air. Look at that. The incoming ore had a crust of whitish substance overlying it. The courier had seen it before from time to time. Somebody said it was called snow. Trickles of water took the place of the flakes. Imagine having to work and live on a crazy planet like that. The all-clear signal sounded and the courier gunned his ground-go forward to the new ore heap. The receipt foreman rumbled out to the new pile of ore.
Look at that, said the courier. Snow.
The receipt foreman had seen it all, knew it all, and held junior couriers in contempt. It's bauxite, not snow. It had some snow on it when it landed. The receipt foreman scrambled over to the right side of the pile and fished around. He brought up a small dispatch box. Standing on the ore, he noted the box number on his clipboard and then brought it over to the courier. Blade vehicles were charging in on the new pile.
The receipt foreman impatiently handed the clipboard to the courier, who signed. The box was thrown at him. He threw back the clipboard, and it caught the receipt foreman on his massive chest. The courier gunned his ground go and swiftly threaded his way through the incoming machines, speeding toward the Intergalactic Central Administration compound. A few minutes later, a clerk, carrying the box, walked into the office of Zaffin, junior assistant to the deputy director for secondary uninhabited planets. The office was little more than a cubicle, for space at Intergalactic Central housed 300,000 administrative personnel. Zaffin was a young, ambitious executive.
"What's that box doing wet?" he said.
The clerk, who was about to set it down among papers, hastily withdrew it, got out a cloth, and dried it. He looked at the label.
"It's from Earth. Must be raining there."
"Typical," said Zaffin. "Where's that?"
The clerk tactfully hit a projector button and a chart flared on the wall. The clerk shifted the focus, peered, and then put a claw on a small dot. Zaffin wasn't bothering to look. He had opened the dispatch box and was sorting the dispatches to different departments under him, zipping an initial on those that required it. He was almost finished when he held up a dispatch that required some work and couldn't just be initialed. He looked at it with distaste.
"Green flashed urgent," said Zaffin.
The clerk took it apologetically and read it.
"It's just a request for information."
"Too high a priority," said Zaffin. He took it back. "Here we have three wars in progress and somebody from, where?"
"Earth," said the clerk.
"Who sent it?"
The clerk took the dispatch back and looked.
"A security chief named Turl."
"What's his record?"
The clerk put his talons on a button console, and a wall slot clattered and then spat out a folder. The clerk handed it over.
"Turl," said Zaffin. He frowned. "Haven't I heard that name before?"
The clerk took back the folder and looked at it.
"He requested a transfer about 5 months ago, our time."
"Steel trap brain," said Zaffin. "That's me."
And he meant it. He took the folder back.
"Never forget a name."
He leafed through the papers.
"Must be a dead dull place, Earth. And now a dispatch with the wrong priority."
The clerk took the folder back. Zaffin frowned.
"Well, where's the dispatch?"
"On your desk, Your Honor."
Zaffin looked at it.
"He wants to know what connections..." "Numph? Numph?"
The clerk worked the console and a screen flashed.
"Intergalactic Director, Earth."
"This Turl wants to know what connections he has in the main office," said Zaffin.
The clerk pushed some more buttons. The screen flashed. The clerk said,
"He's the uncle of Knipe, Assistant Director of Accounting for Secondary Planets."
"Well, write it on the dispatch and send it back."
"It's also marked confidential," said the clerk.
"Well, mark it confidential," said Zaffin.
He sat back, thinking. He turned his chair and looked out the window at the distant city. The breeze was cool and pleasant. It dissipated some of his irritation. Zaffin turned back to his desk.
"Well, we won't discipline this, what's-his-name?"
"Turl," said the clerk.
"Turl," said Zaffin. "Just put it in his record that he assigns too high priorities to nonsense. He's simply young and ambitious and doesn't know much about being an executive. We don't need a lot of excess and incorrect administration around here. You understand that?"
The clerk said that he did and backed out with the box and its contents. He wrote into Turl's record,
"Assigns too high priorities to nonsense. Young, ambitious, and unskilled as an executive. Ignore further communications."
The clerk grinned wickedly in his own little cubicle as he realized the description also fit Zaffin. He put the answer to Turl's dispatch on it in a precise clerkly calligraphy and didn't even bother to file a copy. In a few days, it would be teleported back to Earth. The mighty, imperious, and arrogant world of Cyclo hummed on. 5. The day for the demonstration had arrived, and Turl went into a flurry of activity. Up early, He had again put the animal through its paces. He had made it drive the blade machine up and down and up and down and around. Turl had pushed it so hard that the machine had finally run out of fuel. Well, he could fix that. He went to see Zt.
"You don't have a requisition," said Zt.
"But it's just a fuel cartridge."
I know, but I have to account for them."
Turl grated his fangs.
Leverage, leverage, all was leverage, and he didn't have anything at all on Zt.
Suddenly, Zt halted what he was doing. There was a flicker of a smile on his mouth bones. It made Turl suspicious.
"Tell you what I will do," said Zt. "After all, you did give up 5 recon drones. I'll just check out that blade machine."
Zt put on a face mask and Turl followed him outside. The animal was sitting on the machine, collared, the lead rope firmly fastened to a roll bar. It was kind of bluish and shivering in the bitter wind of late winter. Turl ignored it. The hood popped up as Zt released the catches.
"I'll just make sure it's all functional," he said, his voice muffled by his face mask and further muffled because his head was in the motor mounts. "Old machine."
"It's a wrecked machine," said Turl.
"Yes, yes, yes," said Zt,
busily pulling and pushing connections.
"But you got it, didn't you?"
The animal was watching everything Zt did. It was standing there on the top edge of the instrument panel, looking down.
"You left a wire loose," said the animal.
"Ah, so I did," said Zt. "You talk?"
"I think you heard me."
"Yes, I did hear you," said Zt. "And I also heard no proper polite phrases."
Turl snorted.
"It's just an animal. What do you mean, polite phrases? To a mechanic?"
"Well, there," said Zt, ignoring Turl. "I think that will be fine in there."
He pulled out a power cartridge and shoved it into the casing and screwed on the cap.
"Start it up."
Turl reached over and pushed a button and the machine seemed to run all right. Zt turned it off for him.
"I understand you're giving some kind of a demonstration today. I never seen no animal drive. Mind if I come out and watch?"
Turl eyed him. He didn't have any leverage on Zt, and all this cooperation and interest was out of character. But he couldn't put a talon on anything wrong.
"Come ahead," he grunted. "It'll take place here in an hour."
He would kick himself later, but right now he had a lot on his mind.
"Could I get warmed up?" said Johnny.
"Shut up, animal,"
said Turl, and he rushed off into the compound. Nervously, Turl waited in the outer office of Numpf. One of the clerks had announced him, but there had been no invitation to enter. Finally, after 45 minutes, he scowled another clerk into announcing him again, and this time he was signaled to enter. Numpf had nothing on his desk but a saucepan of Kerbango. He was looking at the mountain view through the canopy wall. Turl scratched his belt to make a small noise. Numpf eventually turned around and gave him an absent look.
"The demonstration you ordered can take place right away," said Turl. "Everything is already your planet ship."
"Does this project have a number?" said Numpf.
Turl hastily made up a number.
"Project 39A. Your planet ship."
"I thought that had to do with new site recruitment."
Turl had saved himself by adding an A, which no projects had.
"That was probably 39. This is 39A. Substitution of personnel."
"Ah, yes. Transferring more personnel from home."
"No, your planet ship. You remember the animal, of course."
Recollection cut into Numpf's fog.
"Ah, yes, the animal."
And he just sat there.
"Leverage, leverage," thought Turl.
He had no leverage on this old fool. He had combed the offices inside and out and could find none. The home office had merely said he was the uncle of Knipe, assistant director of accounting for secondary planets. All this meant, apparently, was that he had his job by influence and was a known incompetent. At least, that was all Turl could make out of it. Obviously, Numph was not going to stir. Turl could see his plans crumbling. He would wind up just vaporizing that damned animal and forgetting it. And all for lack of leverage. Behind his impassive face, Turl was thinking so hard sparks were flashing internally.
"I'm afraid," said Numph, "that..."
Hastily, Turl interrupted.
"Don't let him say it. Don't let him condemn me to this planet."
The inspiration was on his lips in a miraculous bypass of his thinking.
"Have you heard from your nephew lately?"
he said. He meant it socially. He was about to add a lie that he had known Knipe in school. But the effect was out of proportion. Numph jerked forward and looked at him closely. It was not much of a jerk, but it was enough.
There was something there.
Turl said nothing. Numph kept looking at him, seeming to wait.
Was Numph afraid?
He had started to say so, but that was a figure of speech.
"There's no reason to be afraid of the animal,"
said Turl, smoothly, easily, deliberately misinterpreting things.
"It doesn't bite or scratch."
Numph just kept on sitting there. But what was that in his eyes?
"You ordered the demonstration, and it's already your planet ship."
"Ah, yes, the demonstration."
"If you'll just get a mask and come outside."
"Ah, yes, of course."
The intergalactic head of the planet drank off the Kerbango in steady gulps, got up, and took his face mask off the wall. He went into the hall and signaled some of his staff to put on their breathe masks and follow, and then, with many slit-eyed, darting glances at Turl, he walked with him to the outside air. A mystified Turl was jubilant, nevertheless. The old fellow positively reeked with fear. The plan was going to come off.